Welcome to AI Snacks with Romy and Robbie, an AI literacy podcast translating AI and robotic technologies from difficult to easy to understand. I'm Anastasia, your host. I spent 34 years working for Fortune 500 companies and startups. And I started in AI in 1989. And for those watching on YouTube, this is my British short hair, my furry muse, the real Romy. Yes, I write Romy and Robbie AI series for the whole family using his beautiful face. And I refer sometimes to Romy as my chief marketing officer because he brings eyeballs to my Instagram channel. But this episode is something which is completely outside of his comfort zone. We are talking AI in marketing, and Romy loves to eat and to sleep. He does not like financial figures and key performance indicators. I am inviting to my studio Mike Montague. He is an expert in AI and marketing, and we will deep dive into trends in marketing utilizing AI concepts. We will talk about automation, we will talk about machine learning, we will talk about how AI gives marketing an edge, what is great and what does not work, not maybe because the technology is not powerful, but because we apply it in a way which is somehow spooky for human beings. So let's open the studio and welcome Mike. Hi Mike, welcome to my studio.
Hey, so great to be here, Anastasia. I have really been looking forward to this one. I love nerding out about AI, and I feel like this is going to be a good conversation.
Absolutely. So I was very much looking forward towards it. And my first question is kind of straightforward. What was your moment in life when you realized that AI has this momentum in marketing? And was it an aha moment, or did you expect it? How did you think about AI in marketing for the first time?
Yeah, I think kind of like everyone, when ChatGPT hit and I had that moment of like, oh, this is a magic trick. This is something different, right? A lot of people have talked about that feeling. I thought that, you know, AI had shifted. This was a mainstream thing, and it blew up quickly in my network of sales and marketing people because of what you could do with it. But for me personally, it was within that year. So I think in 2024, I saw where I was doing my knowledge work. I was in doing a lot of content marketing and producing a lot of podcasts and doing a lot of generating myself. I've ghostwritten books, multiple books, and written coursework books and all kinds of stuff that, when I saw that I could do that in a tenth of the time, and not even just having it write it for me, but generating outlines, summarizing podcast transcripts, you know, creating the titles, descriptions, meta keywords, email text, LinkedIn posts, all of the work that I was doing in a tenth of the time, I thought, this is amazing. Instead of doing it for one company, I need to do this for 10 companies and try and make 10 times the amount of money. And I got to go all in on this, because it's not just like subtle. You know, a lot of tools are like, oh, it'll make you 10% faster, or even 1% faster is a good investment for most people. But when I saw it was like 9, 10x my time and output that I could do, I was really shocked.
That's so interesting. So it was for you about productivity. But when you look back into all your experience around AI, and obviously you host a very successful show, maybe you heard something from your guests, what are the common misconceptions around AI in marketing, or marketing for AI?
I have two things here. The first one is an analogy that I call like the Iron Man analogy. And I don't know if your audience, you know, knows the Marvel superheroes, Iron Man and the Terminator movies, but, and you've probably even heard this analogy before too, because you're in the world. But I think a lot of people make the mistake in marketing of thinking like, oh, I'm going to set up these AI agents or marketing automation, and it's just going to go sell for me, and I don't have to do anything. And I'm going to set up these independent Terminator robots that are going to go hunt down leads and convert them for me. In reality, AI is not there yet. And that doesn't really work, because if everyone has that, we would have millions and millions of Terminator lead robots like spamming you all the time, reaching out, interrupting stuff. It just doesn't scale and it doesn't build trust. And AI, like you said, is fast. It's a productivity increase, but I also see it as like an amplifier, that if you have bad marketing and you turn an amplifier up, you're just yelling the wrong message to the wrong people louder. You're not actually fixing your marketing problem. So the Iron Man approach for me is, how do we, Tony Stark, the human in Iron Man, wraps himself in the technology suit and has Jarvis AI in his ear, helping him make decisions, give him information he wouldn't otherwise have as a human. And it turns Tony Stark into the superhero. So it's amplifying his natural abilities. And I think that's just a much better approach. Do you have any thoughts there, or should I share number two with you, my thought?
No, look, I'm all with you. It's not just in marketing, it's everywhere. So for me, AI enhances great skills of humans. But first and foremost, you need to develop those great skills. So we can't cut edges and corners and just some miraculously master those 10,000 hours, which all of us need to develop something. Yeah. And actually, in the age of AI, I even think that it's not just about 10,000 hours. In one thing, you might need those plus maybe 5,000 or 8,000 hours in something else. So AI can enhance human innovation. And what I'm discovering, it's most useful and interesting on the edges, not, let's say, in this median of a model. It's not really interesting if you ask it to compose another bug for you. Yeah, because what is the point? Yeah, or maybe to write another recipe. So it won't probably give you that pleasure, but it might give you some spark, and then you carry on. I'm aware that you are very big on the human centricity in AI. Could you maybe explain it to my audience? What is this human centricity for you?
Well, that's what I was going to say with my point number two, that I think you kind of hit on a 2A, which is if we are working in the middle, that's bad marketing. No good marketing is actually marketing to the masses in the middle, especially for most small businesses. I mean, if you're an enterprise product that can advertise on the Super Bowl or something, sure, you want to hit the most amount of people possible if you're a mass consumer brand. But most businesses are not that. Most businesses are selling to a target audience, which means you need to be on the edges. You need to hit their edges. You need to personalize the messaging. And that's one of the first parts of the human first philosophy that I teach. And I host the Human First AI Marketing Podcast, where I talk to a lot of people about this. And the first one is the customer first. If you don't put them first and you don't understand who they are, you're just making slop, because you're not making anything for a human. The second thing is, and this was the point I was going to get, I think you have to do the work first as the human marketer or business owner, and you have to record your thoughts. You have to give AI the context. You have to tell it what you're about, what you stand for, what makes your business better or different than others. Like, what is your compelling offer that's unique and different than anything else on the planet? And if you don't do your work first, then it's not going to get great output. And then number three here for human first is your employees. Like I said, I want to make them the superheroes. I don't want to replace them with automation. I know that there are cases for that. That's just not what I'm interested in. And especially in marketing, it's a human activity. We need creative. We need connection. We need trust with people to do good marketing. And I think those are human jobs. So I'm sure there are people out there trying to replace human marketers and salespeople, but I don't want to be in that game.
I recalled one story who someone told me, and this someone is Matthew Quint, who used to lead the brand and marketing research center at the Columbia Business School. So the story is about the holiday season of 2024, when Coca-Cola did an ad with AI. So AI developed this Christmas landscapes with Coca-Cola red and the truck, and there were deers and polar bears and some cute dog. And the marketing community was horrified. So they said, there's no real storytelling there. So obviously no human creativity. It's just some melange of certain scenes from other ads. So this is what AI can perform on wonderfully. And what's the point? But this ad was showed to some test groups and humans actually enjoyed it. And the explanation was, well, so it was very much in line with Coca-Cola brand, the image, and there was this sense of nostalgia. Yeah, so, you know, you kind of smell the Christmas tree and you see the snow. And it was not, let's say, worse comparing to the original ads developed by human beings. So this is kind of, you know, I understand when AI gives you interesting scores and collects data from different platforms and says, okay, this context now is more precise and this is how we can do it. But just reassembling human creativity and creating a new melange, is it a good use case in your eyes? What was going on there?
I think about it a little bit differently. I agree with what you said. I think marketing has been measuring and customizing and doing different persona-based marketing. And, you know, we do a different commercial on, you know, the conservative news channel than we would for the liberal news channel. That's just kind of basic marketing. But AI can help us do that down to the individual person. So we're no longer trying to hit an audience or a persona. We can actually create a customized ad just for Anastasia. And that is really cool. That's some tools that marketers have never had before. And that's why I got excited about it. And I would say the same thing goes for creativity. You know, they say that that Coca-Cola ad was AI generated, but the artwork or the video was, some human still had to come up with the idea and, you know, look and say like, oh, I want, you know, the Coca-Cola brand, and they were working from human creativity first. So that means two things to me. One is I don't think AI long-term would have come up with the marketing of Christmas and the polar bears and, you know, all of the puppies and everything that, that Coca-Cola uses, but it can make a copy of a copy. And so it would degrade over time. That works in the short term, but if you don't have a human monitoring that and re-engaging or setting the target audience or even writing the prompt, I think it's going to degrade. Some of them can hit and some of them can miss, right? That's just like any type of creative endeavor. The other thought for me, though, is what an amazing creative tool that if it is possible to do that. I made a fake NFL football team last night and made a 4-second video of them playing a Monday Night Football game against the New England Patriots just as a joke in less than 2 minutes. I had a 4-second clip that looked like it was shot on national television of something that never happened that I could send, you know, to friends and family and have fun with. That wasn't possible 2 years ago. And so the creative tools for anybody and that's creative music. I saw another great song this weekend that was a bluesy old school, like soulful remix of a rap song. And it was incredible. It had a lot of heart. It would definitely resonate. It already had like 100,000 likes or something like that when I saw it. So it's connecting with people, but a human made that. A human said, oh, I have this idea. What if I took this song and I recreated it in a way that was different? I think those are the really cool things that we're going to be able to do. So for me, it's inspiring. I don't think it's cheating. I think in creativity, stealing, combining ideas, using all the tools that are available to you is the best way to make stuff and the best way to innovate and make cooler new things. So I see that stuff as an opportunity and I don't worry about it copying. Some people, again, people will copy, but that will get worse over time and it's not scalable. So I'm going to focus on making the best stuff possible.
This is interesting. I wanted to ask you about the copyrights, but first, so what I'm hearing from you is kind of, well, so next, or this season, Coca-Cola might deliver an ad to me, to Anastasia, using a British short hair. which has never been in Coca-Cola ads. But I write books about Romy, the real Romy, and British Shorthair cats. So explaining AI in an entertaining way. So here is a British Shorthair in a Christmas movie for me. Only that AI does not know what British Shorthair is. And AI does not know what a polar bear is. And it can't probably distinguish in terms of a concept between dogs and, I don't know, trucks, right? So do you think there is a trust into something that does not understand?
No, I don't think so. I think that's where we need the humans. It'll feel like trust. It can fake it, and some humans fake it and stuff, right, too. So that's not unusual. It will fool some people. I think we have, you know, passed the Turing test there, where it's capable of fooling the majority of humans and into trusting it, certainly in short circumstances or small conversations in marketing. But I also think that, like I said, AI is a fast tool and trust is slow. It's a human process. It requires a lot of nuance in reading the other person, understanding context, and knowing when to break the rules, which I think AI, as far as I've seen so far, is not great at doing. So I think in marketing, but also in just human communication and trust, it's when you see that thing or you get that gut feeling and you go, oh, 9 times out of 10, I would do this, but this is the 10th time. Right? That's the stuff that AI is going to really struggle with that I think humans are great at. And then when you're trying to not make stuff for the masses, when you're, I love your, you know, the line, the customer is always right. And you may have even been familiar with the economics guy that came up with that didn't actually say the consumer, the customer, one person is right. He said the consumer, the market is always right. And so I think AI can always be right when it's looking at millions of people. But if it's looking at one person, that customer can be wrong. That customer can need something different. AI will be wrong when trying to reach one person right now. So it's the difference between statistical probability and kind of individual certainty and a customized need, right?
It's a couple of things, really. So I want to come back to this copyright. So AI tokenizes text or pixels, right? So it's like you have this grain of sand or rice, and those grains might come from different oceans, and they are now on this beach, right? And you don't necessarily understand what was the initiation of one particular particle, right, of this grain. You just hold it with all other pieces of sand. And this is how AI uses text. It's not necessarily Jules Verne or not necessarily whoever, Somerset Maugham. But yes, of course, those books were part of AI training, and many authors are upset. Many movie makers are upset. Of course, if Coca-Cola is doing the ad, it produces it on the cohort of Coca-Cola data, right? So it's their creation. They can use it in whatever shape and form they want. So what are you telling to creators who are saying, it competes with me, and by the way, it uses what I probably submitted to YouTube? So how come, what is your thinking process there?
I have a strong take here, and it's not the mainstream take. So I think there's two different things. Number one is I thought it was a brilliant solution for the AI trainers in the way that you described it. It is not copying. It is deconstructing and reconstructing something new, which is a completely original work. So I don't think any of the copyright laws hold up, and I don't think anybody can complain about what it's doing. I think any human could go watch your movie or read your book and then take those ideas and spin them and pull them up, and they could copy it and steal your work, which would not be great. Or they could build on it and use these ideas. And every filmmaker, every writer, every creative was inspired by other humans' work. And they've incorporated it into their knowledge base that they use. And so, yeah, AI should as well. And I think what it's doing is a super fast, you know, superhuman version of what we've been able to do. And that's dangerous for people that make money off of copyrighted works, like publishers and the Disney Corporation. Frankly, I don't care if the Disney Corporation gets their IP used. It should. I think they've abused the copyright protection laws and they have plenty of money. I'm not worried about it. So I might not get hired by Disney, or I might not be a fan of an individual writer, but anybody could have done this. I used to teach business courses for 15 years. Every student that taught in my classroom, I was hoping to get my ideas into their head, and I was hoping they would use them. I can't stop them from using those works to train other people on it. Now, the caveat for that is, I do think there are laws around trademarks and service marks that should remain, that you can't pretend to be someone else and steal their fame, and you can't, you know, use the Disney characters in your own movie and sell it and make money for it. But you can use those concepts, you can use those ideas, those frameworks, those, you know, colors and influences to make something new. I do, though, worry about the exact ripoffs. Like, they can make a song that sounds exactly like Taylor Swift and a video that looks exactly like her doing it. I think monetizing that is not okay. If it's fan art and other things, great, fair use, have at it. So I think executing on those ideas still has to be in an ethical way, but I don't think the tools are bad, and I don't think people that try to repurpose, you know, works or the collective knowledge of humanity are doing the wrong thing. Is that fair?
I am absolutely with you on that. So I'm frankly not really worried with tokenization. And AI does not have those world models intrinsically embedded into the technology. So this is why, for example, the new GPT models make stupid mistakes from the position of a human. Like, you know, there was this GPT-5. Yeah, or GPT-5 doing the map of Germany, right? And instead of Saxonia, it was Saxe. I mean, it does not have the concept of this piece of Germany, of this geography with a certain name. It used a piece of token, which it attributed to a certain territory. So I am not upset about this. And of course, we need skilled humans who would say, okay, geographically, the name is wrong, the title is wrong, please don't use this as a map, right? So if I write Romy and Robbie, be my guest, tokenize my writing, because frankly, I don't really care, but I don't want someone to use Romy the cat for their own creations, because this is then really what I created and developed. Same with music, same with all kind of brand attributes. But I am kind of worried that, you know, the deep fakes might fall into the hands of criminals. So this is another kind of, you know, track. It's not about entertainment and media use. It's really about crime, right? And how I commit a crime, we might discuss whether I use, let's say, the analog weapons or I use digital weaponry. Crime is a crime is a crime. But I wanted to ask you, so from your experience and what you hear on your show, what are the best stories when AI truly moved the needle in a marketing story for a certain company or a certain brand and in positive way? And then what might have been stories where someone was negatively surprised by how AI performed? If performance and AI could be put together, because I guess those are always creators, human creators of AIs, or those using it to fine-tune the parameters and apply it to your own context?
Yeah, I think in my world, I can use a great use case to kind of explain what I'm talking about here. I worked with one company that used the DISC personality profiles. Are you familiar with that? To customize their email marketing campaign, their drip sequence. And when they used AI to go out and determine the disc profile or the likely disc profile of all of the people on their prospect list and then sort them in their CRM HubSpot into four different lists for each personality. And then they rewrote their generic campaign to match the personality styles, those four different ones. They saw a like 30 to 300% increase in their results. And it was blatantly obvious that we were getting this correct because the high D messages, for those that are very direct and short and to the point and big picture, you could see the signature line like in the screenshot. It was literally just four sentences of like, hey, here's the scoop. Here, this is the big story. It's going to save you money. Click the link. And then for the detail-oriented people, the message was super long. It had stats and quotes and links to other sources and case studies and all kinds of stuff. And it had a very safe call to action. And the high detail people had the highest unsubscribe rate because if you miss a detail or if it doesn't resonate with them, they're going to unsubscribe. They're the zero inbox people. Like they're all detailed. And we really saw that it moved the needle in all four categories. And the results for appointment set were dramatic. So where we were sending thousands of emails to get like seven qualified sales appointments, we were sending hundreds, like 100, I think it was 169 or something emails sent for six appointments compared to over 10,000. So it was a huge result and really cool. And then the way that I always describe about how to do that wrong, I think, is when we collect too much data and people aren't aware of it and they didn't necessarily opt in. So it's not an AI story, but do you remember the Target story about the 16-year-old girl?
No, I don't know anything about it.
Oh, the Target was sending pregnancy ads and information to a 16-year-old girl, and her father got very upset, you know, went to Target, said, what the heck is going on? And it turns out that Target found out that a 16-year-old daughter was pregnant before he did. And that's not very hard. With marketing information, if we know she bought a pregnancy test 1 month, the next month buys prenatal vitamins, we can assume the test was positive.
It's already 10 years old, right? I mean, it's really ancient age, if you want, in consumer insights and analytics.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. You said 10. I always use the example, too, that if you fast forward that 10 years, we can still know what she's likely to buy at Target because a 10-year-old boy's, you know, gift of the year is this Lego set. We can still be marketing that to her and we can be reading their mind because of the information we know that she had a positive pregnancy test 10 years ago and started buying, you know, dinosaurs and baseball bats to decorate the room and stuff. We can say, okay, this is a likely Lego purchase 10 years later. And I think some of that can get creepy. I don't necessarily think it's manipulative, but it can really hurt your results or create a lot of pushback. If we're just creating generic slop that doesn't sound like it came to a person because we over-personalized it, and it's like, ooh, that's not from a human. No human would know that about me. No human would have done that. I think it sends off our alarm bells and it crosses that uncanny valley where we go, this isn't right. And then also, if a corporation has too much information about us that they should not have, and if you're buying lists or buying information about people, I think that's also where they go, they shouldn't know this about me. If I'm opting into that, and if you're creating customized messages to me based on what I said, like I think we all love our YouTube or Netflix algorithm, which is showing us something we're likely to see, and we've agreed to share our preferences about what shows we like to watch in order to get a better service, I think that's fair game. The other stuff of buying information and spamming or manipulating the system is not okay.
Yeah, what happens actually every day. But, you know, those two examples. So one, this optimization of email campaign and really converting outreach into a real meeting. And the 16 years old pregnant girl, there are some similarities because in the first case, so AI actually could see certain correlations which were too difficult for humans to spot. And probably I'm now using a human word for AI, it read something into it, right? So there was this very famous case when AI was reading the eye scans from human eye doctors, and it could really say, this is a male, this is a female. And for a human doctor, it did not matter because an eye is an eye. So from the knowledge of today, how we treat eye diseases, the gender does not really play a role. But maybe in the future, we will learn something which will really improve how we care for human patients. And we will discover that gender has a certain connotation for the disease, right? Or for some eye conditions. So maybe AI sees something there, which right now we cannot comprehend. From the level of knowledge, and maybe this is just, let's say, a signal which we will never treat as a real one. In another case, I mean, AI did not fail in terms of reading something into the data and comprehending, so once again, the human word for AI, and reading them correctly. But it was tremendously disturbing for like being an empathetic human being and really treat this case with care and human dignity. And here's a real question. So once again, trust, yeah? And once again, how do we use it? And who dictates the framework of the usage? Is it a regulator? Is it a company? Do you think at some point in time we will have real policies in place on how to utilize AI in marketing?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've needed them in the past, like the spam regulation and the cookie policies and other stuff that were developed. I am generally against that. I think the cookie policies, particularly in the EU, made the entire world's internet uglier and more cumbersome to use. And so did some of the protections help consumers? Yes, but the way that they did it was horrible. And so I am a fan of more elegant kind of solutions than regulation, because I think there are too many edge cases and stuff. So what I'm hoping we see is our own personal AIs develop that act in our best interest and block spam or you know, combat against messages that are coming at us with AI, or help us identify what was AI generated and what was human generated. And anymore, it's probably a spectrum of both. Maybe this was 70% AI and 30% human, or the other way around. But specifically about bad actors and, you know, AI and cybersecurity and other stuff, I think, you know, things are already against the law, like we said, of stealing somebody's copyrighted information, trademark, money, whatever, you know, selling a product or service that doesn't exist is already against the law. So I don't know how much specific AI regulation we need, but I do think we need companies working on our behalf to protect us in security and to help us find out the truth if we, you know, want to look into something or find out where it was generated. I think a lot of those tracking, I'm hoping, will get much, much better. That whether it's some sort of like ID system would be great to say that, like, oh, this was AI generated, but it was AI generated by me as a marketer working for this company and not as a bad actor trying to pretend to be my company. I think you're going to see politicians and celebrities claim that something was AI generated, and maybe it was. But was it generated by them and their people? Was it generated by the competition who is trying to put, you know, misinformation about, you know, their campaign out into the world? I think we need to know where these things are coming from just to enforce some of the laws that already exist. I think that kind of stuff would be helpful. What's your take?
Frankly, you know, I'm just thinking that those lawyers and sometimes ethicists who are developing all kind of guidances and policies for companies, for brands, and sometimes for nations, they must work with UX and UI designers and treat what they develop there as a product. Because frankly, in the European Union, my take on it is that it's in order to protect those workplaces of bureaucrats. It's not really to care for consumers, because no one can comprehend those frameworks, and no one is reading through 10 pages, which I frankly can't.
Everybody really just clicks accept anyway, and then you did exactly. nothing except slow exactly. people down.
But if you treat this information as a product, and you work with user experience designers and with user interface designer, how should it be presented? What are the most important things? And maybe even highlight certain things with AI, which are very important for this particular type of a person, right? Maybe at some point in time, we will have AIs implemented on our devices, working on the edge, not in the cloud, knowing things about us. And then they will then customize certain communication for what we might pay attention to, not some another person in another European country. But it's kind of interesting for me, the level, the positive and the negative. So in your eyes, and that would be my last question for this episode. So what are the most important trends to watch when it comes to AI in marketing for the next, I would say, 2 to 3 years?
I think there are three things. We've talked about two of them, most of them already, but generative AI is obviously huge in marketing. We're generating a ton of messages. So just use it, sign up for ChatGPT Pro, figure it out and make your life easier. Don't be afraid of it. Jump in and use the tool. Number two is predictive analytics in finding which buyers are ready and which ones aren't. This has been marketing kind of 101 since it started, is that like 95% of your buyers are not ready to buy from you today. They're not in market searching for a solution. So we need to find out who is the best person we should be messaging today or reaching out in a sales or marketing communication to help move the needle for them, and stop spamming and worrying about the other 95% who are not, right? The third is automation, which we've been doing marketing automation for a long time as well. So it's been 10 years of creating sequences and other stuff. I think it's getting much better, and there's some much cooler things that you can do now to personalize the messages and create different sets of automation that would have been a very heavy lift for humans and very expensive before. And number four, the one we haven't really talked about, but it's kind of in your world, is the machine learning stuff of like being able to identify their buyer's trigger events, their personalities. What are those, you said irises, that show whether they're in market or not ready to market. Sentiment analysis is becoming fascinating. I interviewed a lady on my podcast that's, looking at people watch Super Bowl commercials and finding out whether they like them or not and move the needle. And the facial recognition that can happen in video chats and all kinds of stuff are fascinating. But it maybe doesn't even need to be that crazy. It could be simply, something like lead scoring or the personality profiles that we talked about of learning more about my buyer so that I can do better marketing. I think those four things combined really make a huge difference. It's not a small thing. It's a big change. You can do 10 times better marketing, and you can do it for 10 times cheaper. And those two things combined means it's a no-brainer. You got to do it. You got to jump in with both feet, because when you can do it 10 times faster or cheaper, that means small businesses can compete with big brands. It comes down to the idea again, that just because Coca-Cola has all the money doesn't mean they can make the best marketing anymore. Now we can use the tools. We have access to the same creative. We can make a Super Bowl looking ad with AI for free, where they had to spend $1 million and hire a Hollywood producer to make it. That means the playing fields are leveling. There's going to be some shifting in the markets and stuff that I think is going to be very exciting.
Well, I'm very curious to watch this space. So a couple of reactions, and then I will truly close this episode. It's just, the role of small data should increase. It's not just about big data, and how small is small? This is always a question. And how do you trust then into small data with your modeling? So obviously AI works fantastically with quite large data sets. And if you are a small business, do you have access to something like that? So question mark. And in terms of creativity, I think really we need to just train ourselves. So what I kind of, you know, dislike when large companies publish, those were my favorite prompts of the week, seriously. You know, like read through my emails and summarize them. This is your prompt of the week. And you are on the executive leadership team of a huge pharmaceutical company. So I get scared when, and this is, by the way, a real world example. I get scared. So I think we need to play more with AIs in plural to develop our feeling for it. And then we will be capable to apply it in a better way. But I think we will see plenty of disruption. And when, as you say, Coca-Cola competes with some lemonade maker from Switzerland or Austria without any budget, and it might not even need the scale, right? It just needs to address certain niches and be profitable, then we are talking. And can we smell those new trends? Can AI, you know, be this truffle pig for us or truffle poodle to search for something which is hidden from our eye? Yeah. And how do we trust our experience and our intuition? So, Mike, I'm very grateful that you came on my podcast. We really scratched the surface because, you know, I try to produce quite short episodes. Those are snacks that aren't really five courses meals in a Michelin restaurant. But thank you so much. And maybe you will come on my show in a year or something and we will revisit, you know, all those trends and discover new stories to share and to discuss.
I love that. And we should tell everybody you're coming on my show. So if they want to hear your hot takes on all of these ideas, go check out the Human First AI Marketing Podcast and search for Anastasia's episode.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm very keen, really, to demystify AI. I think it's a great technology. So I really love AI, but I don't want to people to be confused about its power. It's powerful when you combine it with great people's skills.
Absolutely. Love it.
Thank you so much. And I will see my audience in a week. Thank you. And that was another episode of AI Snacks with Romy and Robbie. This show is supported by listeners like you. So please go on the book website of the Romy and Robbie AI series, www.romyandrobbie.ai, and please order a copy of Romy, Robbie, and the Secrets of Sleep. This book teaches you about basic concepts of AI and machine learning, about statistics, and about semiconductors. And by the way, the secret of sleep is not just because my cat Romy loves to sleep. It's about the sleep algorithms, which were developed in San Diego and which optimize the functionalities of neural networks. In this episode, we had Mike Montague, an expert in AI in marketing. And I was thrilled to have a conversation with him and learn from him on how to apply AI in marketing being a small business. Let me share what will come next to my show. In a couple of new episodes, you will listen to my conversation with Dave Cole. Dave is a fantastic human being. He developed a series of books, educated children about mathematics. Many people are quite afraid of math. So 2/3 of adult Americans have anxiety when it comes to mathematics. And Dave is someone who can translate mathematical concepts into something digestible and fun. then I will have another episode with Matthias Roeder. So we are continuing our series of Beyond Human, talking about human excellence and how AI might give it another age. And yes, there will be another episode with Ray Mulstock. We are continuing discussing human expectations towards AI and robots in the age of AI and robotics. So please subscribe to my show on all podcasting platforms of your choice, and please give this podcast your review. I'm truly learning from you and very humbled that you give me your time. Thank you.